Welcome to Bad Boy Running. This is the episode, The Bad Stuff, where we talk about what's happening in our world, but also the world of running. This week, we discuss when is the right age to be interviewing young athletes, because does the exposure offer them opportunity and the ability to get new sponsors, or is it just adding extra pressure? Linking into an Athletics Weekly article that was a really good one for the last few weeks. We also talk about the fact that Jodie's dad finally has the grandson that Jodie never was. And we also talk, what was the last thing we were talking about there? Why Roger Bannister didn't win Sports Personality of the Year the year that he broke the 4-minute mile. He lost out to another athlete. What the F? That's all in the bad stuff today, so stay tuned.
They're bad, they're boys, and occasionally they talk about running. Yes, it's the Bad Boy Running Podcast with your hosts, Jody Rainsford and David Heller. Come back. Baby, come back.
Bye, 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 bye. Admit I was a clone to be messing around, but that doesn't mean that you have to leave town.
But a bye 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 bye. Hello, D Bellas. Hello, JD Rainsford. How are we doing?
I'm all right, David Hellard. How are you?
I'm okay.
Are you in your dressing gown?
Yeah, I am in my dressing gown. I've got my the Beast shorts on.
Wait.
I'm addressing it. Well, it's because I get up and do the early shift, look after Herc, so that Briggsy can then sleep. And it was dark this morning. I didn't want to turn the lights on. I was tired, so I just put on whatever I could. But yeah, oh my God, first 2 weeks of babies, easy for us. Third week, when you suddenly get back to work, like, how the hell am I going to get stuff done? Because I just don't have the time in the day to be able to do my work. And going for a run, fuck me, when am I going to fit that in? And still morning shift where I can do nothing with the baby, really, because they just need constant attention. So, yeah, I'm not quite sure how the next few weeks are going to unfold with trying to do any running and also trying to manage businesses and all the run chase stuff coming up as well. And
going away.
Yeah. I keep on forgetting to line up guests, for the podcast as well, cause I haven't been chasing much. So yeah, things are falling apart a little bit at the seams. And even when I haven't figured out when I get my extra sleep, cause I sleep less in the night. And I don't get a period to rest in the day. And so I'm like, oh, no, I'm just getting less sleep now, but I've got more things to do. So not ideal, shall we say.
Yeah,
ideal.
That just happens. Like, that's it. Like, it's over now. Like, that's never coming back. It was just less sleep. Like, that was the biggest shock for Libby. She's just like, so I can't, like, I'm never, ever going to be able to spend, like, 16 hours in bed anymore. And you're like, no, that's literally, you might be lucky, like one weekend if the children are away or something, you'll do it, but you'll still wake up at the time they get up and won't be able to go back to sleep, because you'll then be thinking about them not being there as well. So like, it's over. How it was before, well, is over.
I was fine with, because I'd always wake up early anyway, and I'm not a lion type guy, I haven't been for years for similar reasons, but it's more, oh, I'm now getting up earlier and
you're not achieving anything.
Apart
from caring for your child. I'm not saying that's not achieving anything, but when there are deadlines and things to be done, then it's, you know.
I have.
Weirdly, you know, I mean, it's different for you or whatever, but my clients do not use the excuse of I'm looking after my children as reasons for things not getting done. And for long they've never have really. So I don't know what it is though. I don't know if you ever have this, but as you ease towards Christmas, you know, obviously things like, you know, creatively, I am kind of spent. I am done. Like I get on calls now for clients and things like that, and they're like, you know, what about this? What about this? And I'll level with them. I'll be like, okay, I just want to point out that I am burnt out. So do not expect
You're burnt out now.
Do not expect genius or anything. You are lucky if I make it through this call. Okay, that is like kind of that. But it's like, so you expect that mentally. And I'm fully expecting when I finish next week, I'll get a cold or something like that. That'll just be classic. Oh, you know, we've been holding on. But I tell you what, for the first time ever, like my body has just gone, we are giving up. Like we've given up. Like, I am aching.
JD, this is not the first time ever your body has given up.
No,
I would say, when has your body ever tried? No, I'd say the reverse. It's in constant giving up cycle, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. Normally it holds it together until literally the moment I stop work, and then it'll go, here we go. But this time it's just gone, we don't care. We're clocking off early for this. And I don't know, like, you know, when you are, I don't know if you do know this actually, when it hurts to lie down, actually it hurts, like it aches, no matter what you're in, you can't lie down without it aching, like without your back aching or something. You can't sit up without it. Like no matter what position you're in, it's aching. And you're like, why? Like, how can there not be a single position where I'm not aching? Literally the only thing that would, I imagine if I was able to suspend myself in midair, somehow that would still ache.
I'd say,
so
I'd
it's
say
kind
the
of got
only
to that,
time
it's got to that point.
The only time I've experienced that was teenage heartbreak.
Oh my God. the more you talk about teenage heartbreak, the more chance there is of Libby listening to these episodes. She does love a good
I'm sure it's a Leona Lewis song
episode,
somewhere.
Like...
Why do I ache? If I lie down, I ache. If I stand up, I ache. Why does everything? So are you going through teenage heartbreak
aching.
At the moment?
I don't. Maybe I am. Maybe it's the heartbreak of not being teenage anymore.
Yes.
Although that's possibly it. I don't know. It's just, it's an onslaught. It's an onslaught of
so you're aching right now is what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, I went for like what's it called? A sports massage last night. And you know, like you kind of describe it to me, like going, I don't know, it's just hurting. I was fine up until...
That's in my soul.
I was fine up to about a week ago. It didn't feel... Because the thing is, isn't it? It's like none of these exercise, none of this pain is from anything sports related. It's entirely because I'm at a desk. And so I say, all right, nothing was hurting. And then all of a sudden, everything was hurting. And you're like, it's just suddenly kind of, it doesn't really creep up. Or suddenly just one day you just kind of go, oh God, why is this hurting so much? And so you don't notice like when like, you know, your chest muscles are tight and stuff. Oh, that was the other thing. I started doing like meditation every day. So I've been doing like 45 minutes of breathing. Now, you know that you've got a problem when you're trying to do kind of like deep breathing and your chest is going, no, you're not doing deep breathing, because it's kind of like clenched. Your ribs are kind of clenched there and it's going, no, you can't deep breathe anymore. We've decided that we're stopping you from doing any. And you're like, this, it shouldn't hurt to breathe. It shouldn't feel like my muscles are
tearing. It hurts when I breathe every breath.
We're setting this up for our, what's it called? The BBR album of pure heartbreak. Pure heartbreak would be a great, great event name, wouldn't it?
It would, yes. What would be the poster? He'd be on the poster. The picture of me in my younger days. Ladies, pure heartbreak. Anyone want some pure heartbreak?
Pure heartbreak. It would be like, it's like an OCR type thing, but just, you know, instead of like one of those kind of extreme pain, danger to the max or whatever bullshit names they come up with to have, like, you know, 2K of some middling obstacles. It would just be, just total heartbreak. So you do that and then they start touching you and all of a sudden you realize how fucked you are. Like, they just like sort of go there and you're like, ah! It's like searing pain, like a hot knife cutting through, like, I've done, and it's just, I've done that just through typing quite a lot. And you feel so pathetic because you're like, I wish I was doing something heroic in order to have these injuries.
Standing desk.
Well, I did. Do you know what? I did have a. I was. using a standing desk for a while, but that doesn't really help you with your arms and stuff because you're still kind of clenching forward, aren't you? It's a bit. So yeah, so that's a bit rubbish.
Oh no, well, I'm very sorry to hear that. And I'm going to do stretches as we're recording now. You've
Oh
reminded
God,
me.
Does it have to get worse? What?
Oh,
I'm
there
in
we go.
physical pain, and now I've got to
There
see
we
you
go.
stretching. I thought you were going to stand up and start stretching, so I was going to see you do a groin gyrating towards me on video, and I was like, oh great, that's exactly what I want on a
No,
Wednesday morning.
I'm just under the desk. Lovely. Not stretching, healing, and say. But we've got quite a few things to. I've got my 10K coming up this weekend. But one thing, I've seen an article by Athletics Weekly. Great publication. And
Bit
this, I
serious.
thought, it. Yeah, I mean, it is serious. Yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, there's no way around it. Have you seen? There's a few controversies.
Oh.
I've just remembered Josh Kerr not being selected for Sports Personality of the Year. They've cut it down to six. That is a big deal, right? Goes and wins the 1500 with an incredible finish. Doesn't even make it into Sports Personality of the Year.
So
And
who's up for Sports Personality of the Year?
I've just seen it flashed this morning, but I didn't read the article. Because I didn't have time, because I was looking after little Herc. Let's have a quick
The
Google of
listeners are not
who's.
interested in your childcare excuses,
I know, I
like
know.
your customers, like my clients.
So Mary Earps leads the way, apparently. So fair. Here's the Times have said Josh Kerr, the 1500 world champion. Although I've got a paywall there. So they seem to have done fewer nominations. So they've reduced it down to six.
Right.
I'm just trying to find a click that's not going to be for the Mirror or the Daily Mail and give them advertising spend. So we've got obviously Frankie Dettori. What? Johnson Thompson. We have Broad. I assume that's Stuart Broad. Mary Earps, who has won the Ball d'Or Feminine Awards 2023. I mean, that's pretty amazing. The
So
highest ever
what
ranking
awards
for
was
a
that? What
goalkeeper.
awards was that?
I think it's the well the
You say
what's
it again. The
the
Ballon d'Or, was it?
Ballon d'Or
The Ballon d'Or.
Ballon, the Ballon. Whoops. I hate football, as you know. We've got Rory McIlroy. I assume that's something to do with
Is that?
him. In the Ryder Cup, potentially. But yeah, Josh Kerr. And I just find it strange that they've reduced it down as well. So the and this is do they now have joint personality of the year? Or are they
Joint personality of year. Is
do
that
they still have male and female? Or have they now combined it?
Oh, I don't know. I don't
Because this
know.
is one of the issues of the Brit
Oscars.
Awards, where and the Oscars, and you combine it down, so there are fewer places. And in the Brits, they didn't have a single female nominated, which was a huge controversy, and statistically reasonably improbable, but not that improbable. And so they've now extended the number of people that who are actually nominated. But it seems, reading this, that they've now just created one award, and it's for everyone, and there's only six people nominated, which seems a little bit crazy. When why reduce the spotlight available to athletes of
It's
all
weird.
sports?
It's weird, isn't it? I always think it's weird when they have like team sports players mixed in with individual sports players as well.
Yeah, and the
Why are Mary Earps? Like, why Mary Earps over anyone else?
I mean, to be fair, if she's won the Ballon d'Or,
Ballon d'Or's a
that's
fucking joke. It's an
but
abs. It's an
it's
abs. It's an absolute fucking joke
but it's still
of an award.
representing the best player in the
No, it's
world,
not.
isn't it?
No, it's not. It's a fucking joke. Everyone knows the Ballon d'Or's a joke.
I mean, we know that Messi's won it many years because he's the best player in the world.
It's a joke. Well, it's a joke.
Is he not very good at football?
He plays. It's a joke. They've given it to him this year because he bloody, what's it called? He won the World Cup. But, you know, it's a joke. It's like people boycott it because it's such a joke. It's not a good, representation of it. So why Mary Earps over?
Well, because I guess she was seen as being, she's the highest ranked ever goalkeeper, and she won the Ballon d'Or, and the English
team. Where's a goalkeeper ever won a Sports Personality of the Year award?
Well, there you go. That shows how great she must be, surely, really? To be favourite.
Really?
So yeah, we've got, it's strange,
Frankie,
isn't it?
Frankie Dettori!
But the part of the issue now is by reducing down the number of positions, six people for men and women, does that mean it always has to be three of each? Because that, when we used to have 10 of each, and we've gone to three of each, or maybe even there's two females on there. So no, so actually, it just seems to me incredibly strange that why are you creating yourself issues by reducing down the number?
Does anyone care about BBC Sports Personality Year? This has been a joke forever as well, hasn't it?
Absolutely. I love it. I love it every year. The roundup of the year of sport. My mum used to record it for me so I could watch it when I came home from school. It would be the first thing I'd watch. We'd sit and watch it together. It was a wonderful thing. Wonderful thing. But going back to Athletics Week Weekly. So
Wait a minute. If you look at the winners and nominees, there's been six every year since 2019.
Maybe I just not noticed in all this time. There's been six total.
Yeah. So last year, Beth Mead, Jessica Gadirova, Ronnie O'Sullivan, Jake Whiteman, Eve Muirhead and Ben Stokes.
There surely were far more in the past.
I thought there were far more in the past. I mean, when you look at the people that have won it, do you remember Tyson Fury got nominated and then he threatened to sue them because he didn't want to be nominated?
Ah.
Like 2 years ago.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah. But I say, why not open it up? Why not give, because they do roundups of the year anyway. Six for both male and female seems ridiculously small. And I don't understand the need to. I mean, given realistically, are we going to get someone who's who's non-gendered win it? Is that the reason why it's reduced down? But going to the article about Athletics Weekly, I thought this was really interesting. So it's not often you read an article that you get the journalist actually telling you their situation and almost asking you the dilemma of what it is. So Jason Henderson's written for Athletics Weekly for years. He's great. We met him when we went out to the on launch of OACC or OCC, their running club. And he was saying, he was asking, like, how much coverage should teenage athletes receive in the age of social media? And he wrote this really good blog where he was basically saying he's not quite sure what he should be reporting on and when. Because actually, as a young athlete, receiving exposure, if you do well, can be really beneficial. Because suddenly you could get sponsors interested. It helps in a lot of ways. And if we think about who we've just interviewed, so maybe we're part of the problem as well. We've just interviewed at the age of 16, the under 20 European champion, which to me was, I mean, he's now 18, which to me is an astounding feat. And they've pointed out that, for example, that Katerina Johnson Thompson was the front cover of the magazine in 2008 when she was 15. And Keely Hutchinson, cover star, age 16, Dina Asher-Smith, age 17. But that they've also, there has been some criticism for, if you then interview young athletes, creating all this pressure on them. And so the article is great in that it almost says, I don't, what is the expectation here? Like, what is the right thing to do? Should we be protecting athletes against, for example, the English schools championships? Quite a big deal for those athletes. And for the right mentality, quite fun to be interviewed and have your picture in a magazine. For someone, but with social media now, able to absolutely accelerate the attention that someone gets, do we need to be more responsible in reporting anything for young people? And I'm completely clueless.
So actually, so clarify exactly what the suggestion is that publishing something does. So previously, if, you know, when social media wasn't around, someone publishes something, an interview with a young athlete, and because you don't have social media, then people just read it, accept it, whatever. Is the implication then that if you publish something with social media, you're giving them much greater prominence, because then that is shared online, people can comment on it, then people then have higher expectations? Where's the damage coming from?
So Jason was referencing the Cardiff Cross Country Challenge, and he said that when the coverage went live last weekend, a teacher messaged to ask whether we should be tagging in an under 13 winner into a video on Instagram. And we spoke to Runner's Nerd. There's often videos of people who've set, you know, someone breaks 17 minutes age 7, or someone set the world record and they're tagged in it often, or their pages, which might be managed by their parents. And they also said, you know, on the flip side, the father of other teenagers, of another teenage winner, was asking why they hadn't published the post-race interview of their child on the channels. And then in recent weeks, they'd been asked, someone from the athletics governing body had questioned their decision to pursue an interview with a 14-year-old runner that focused on young athletes who had made their mark in the sport this year, with the implication being that the coverage would put too much pressure on the athlete. So,
Wait. Have you ever read an interview with a 14-year-old runner?
No. Well, I mean, I'm sure I have, but I don't. It's not something I explicitly remember or kind of seek out.
How good? I mean, how good is an interview with a 14-year-old runner really going to be? Is it like, when you talk about, let's think about worthiness of publishing. Did they publish that because they thought, oh, we need to be seen to publish this, rather than, oh, this is going to be a good interview?
Well, I think it's always nice to hear from someone who looks like they're going to be a star and kind of track their progress.
But they're getting in early to say, oh, we've spoken to this person early. That's the real reason they're doing it. They're not going to get any real insight from a 14-year-old, are they?
No, they might do. I mean, understanding some of their training, you could certainly be like, you know, how have you found the sport? Like, who do you train with? All these things are people who read Athletics Weekly are probably quite interested in that. And like, you know, what's your exposure to, are you doing, how many miles a week are you running, and things along those lines. And actually something else he recognizes is that there have been some like big name athletes when they were first on live on the BBC have been absolutely overwhelmed by having to do interviews. And in some ways it's a more gentle form of introducing them into the media And so they actually get used to chatting to people and not being completely bowled over by a camera or bowled over by questions.
Yeah.
So, I thought it was a really good piece because I don't know what the answer is either, where there are surely
anything though to do with social media, like posting on social media, tagging in social media, thing is all permissions based. Like, you know, for example, you know, one thing that always happens at any events, like football events, things like that, is that no one's, you're not supposed to film. That's just it. You just don't film because you don't, there's a possibility you could put other children's, on social media and stuff. So you're not allowed to film of anything as well. So you never have that issue of doing that. I don't know whether cross country events, you know, featuring younger people it's a much harder thing to police, I can understand, but doing things like as an editorial publication and stuff, you know, tagging people in without getting permission of the parents or whatever, that does seem a bit of a strange thing to do.
But then
seeking parents' permission for all of those things.
But you would have published the results in previous years in the paper.
Yeah, you might have published results, but it's a big difference between someone being able to click on something and go straight to a personal profile. You couldn't, you know, just because someone's results have been published in the newspaper doesn't mean that you now know, you know, what they look like, you know, what their family looks like, you know, and you can see them online. So there's a big difference.
Yeah, and so do you think that's where the line is then, not tagging?
Yeah, I think anything to do with any kind of coverage online, I think that requires something that's going to essentially point to a personal profile, has to require some kind of parental permission. I think that's a very reasonable thing to suggest. And then you could say to parents, you know, that if you do want your, you know, if you are happy for the children to be featured and things like that, make sure that there's something on a profile or whatever that makes it clear about how to get in contact with them. And you do the situation like that. I do think there is a big difference. It just has to be agreement upon it, doesn't it? Like, some people will not want people covered and some people will, like you say, because some people are very keen on promoting and some people won't be. And so I think having a no permit, you know, no tagging until permission has been granted is probably a really safe way to do it.
So say at your sports day then, would you be allowed to take a picture of your child crossing the line or winning a race?
No. Well, yeah, you are, but you're not allowed to. You're told not to put them on social media. But then at our sports day, we have photographers. So that's they have the photographers, so they don't need to.
From Athletics Weekly?
They're not from Athletics Weekly. They're from a professional photography company who manages to capture them with various angles and make them look epic.
Do they then sell them back to you?
To then sell them back to us, yeah.
No, you've got to buy your school sports day. Oh God!
Of course you do. What?
But they don't let you. But they do let you take your own photos if you want.
You can take your own photos, but they're never as good as the ones that, like, the ones that we've got are just brilliant. Like, they're just epic. Like, and the thing is, you can really see. I felt really bad actually because I did something stupid. I laughed initially at Hugo's photos because of the face he was making, but then it made me realize just how hard he's trying, and then I felt really terrible for myself, and I thought,
was it a face you didn't recognize?
It wasn't
in yourself.
It's the way he wait there. I've got to show you them actually. Just give me a second. They are great.
Oh, do bad. So we're not going to be able to publish these because of the rules on social. So I'll have to describe them to you. I've not seen Hugo actually in years. So I don't know what age he's going to look like, or even whether he'll be lucky enough to have Libby's good looks or tainted with Jodie's. So we will find out shortly. Pause. I'm recording again. Recording back on.
No, I was saying that he is a proper sportsman. He is so into his sports in a way that I just wasn't as much. Yeah, you know, I was good at sport at school, but he is like so massively competitive, loves team sports, you know, really kind of getting into it, stuff like that. Really, really competitive. He's basically the son my dad wished he had. So when Frieda did her like sports day stuff, you know, it was great and everything. And we got these lovely pictures from her, and all of her pictures were kind of like this. Her smiling and, you know, crossing the line and just looking really kind
she's
of...
She's got a great gait. She's really striding out.
She is, isn't she? But yeah, absolutely, absolutely loving it. You know, this like kind of thing. And then we get his pictures. And initially I thought, oh, that's a kind of a straight face. But his face, like...
Nice. Yeah, like he's pushing.
Like he's properly pushing. Like he's properly pushing. And then he got these ones as well. So he's... And he's kind of these quality, like he's going
I love
hard.
The fact in the hurdles, he's going over the hurdles like he's doing a long jump. He's got his legs out, his arms to the sides. He's really having to attack that hurdle.
He's just like attacking it, like as hard as he can. And like no care for how he looks on camera or anything. And so it's just brilliant. And of course, you know, you never kind of like capture those on thing. But yeah, but... It's difficult because we watched that David Beckham documentary.
Mm.
Have you seen that?
I've seen parts of it, yeah.
And his dad recorded like every single match that he ever played and then used to play it back and stuff like that. And you can't do that anymore. You can't record like their matches and things like that. So it's really annoying because you can't, you know, not that I want to be the type of parent that goes, oh, I've had a look at your performance, son, and I think there's a few areas we can improve upon or anything else like that. So it is different. But I do think that there is a really clear point at which you can delineate between, you know, seeking parents' permission to do things and allowing them to, because every parent, if their child does well, of course it would be great for them to appear in a magazine or be featured in some way. And I just think as long as you have that real understanding, and the athletics bodies can make that really clear as well as to what that understanding should be. I don't think it has to be really complicated.
It's severing. It's just making sure there's no link directly to the child.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I know people can search up and things like that, and it's actually much easier to search up. But I think there's a big difference. Tagging someone in something is pretty intrusive, and pretty and certainly I don't think a publication should be doing that. It's not down to the publication to do that, unless, you know, and the only reason for doing that is to get more clicks,
or to give them more followers, to actually help them grow their brand, their profile.
But that's not the job. That's not the job of an editorial publication. It shouldn't be the job of a publication. Your job as a publication is not to promote that person. It's to tell the story. And if you think it is to promote it, then you shouldn't be doing running a fucking publication. It's not the job of a publication to promote.
But the reason why athletes deal with publications is for their promotion.
Yes, absolutely.
And so by then actually helping the athletes, it might not be their job, but helping the athletes is a good thing. And actually recognizing...
Yeah, but tagging someone in without their permission, fine if they have their permission, but tagging them in without their permission under the auspices that, oh, I'm just helping you.
I'm not suggesting that they should force it upon them, but they certainly with other more established athletes, then the athletes would want to be tagged in with their public profiles because they are incentivized to have larger followings, and so you are helping the athlete.
Whereas, I don't think.
If they ask for it,
I think that's fine. I don't think that it's down to the publication to make that decision, and to say that it's because I'm trying to help. We're trying to help you.
Sure, but I'd say of an athlete who is who's interviewing with a publication, who is over the age of 18, it would be expected, and probably athletes would be surprised if they weren't tagged in content.
Yeah, I know, but I'm talking about if they're at a race or something. If they're at a race and then tagging someone in without their permission and using the excuse, oh, we're just trying to get you more followers, is pretty disingenuous.
But I wouldn't say that's true if Athletics Weekly, for example, or you know, trail running or trail runner or Runner's World were filming at the Olympics or filming at like professional athletes filming in races being tagged in content for them.
We're not talking about the Olympics. Oh, we're talking about like a cross country race with a bunch of 14-year-olds in it.
But we're talking about like national championships.
Yeah.
So that is more akin to the Olympics than it is just a random cross country race. This is to do with it's something of interest to the nation.
Yeah, so I just don't understand how they, if someone is under a certain age, how they feel they can tag someone in without their permission.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, I think we were agreed on that, I think that's a fairly simple rule, but I also do think there is an expectation of magazines tagging athletes to try and build their profile as well. And so, but you're right, that just needs permission of the individual. Well, really permission of the parent, because the individual's too young to make those decisions and doesn't truly understand the exposure that they are opening themselves up to on social.
No, exactly. Exactly. I just think, I think it just needs to be agreement upon it and just make it really clear. Because I do understand that that's the challenge, isn't it? It's like, what is the role of Athletics Weekly? Of course, it's going to be, shining a light on talent coming through. And, the age thing's always is going to be an issue because that's the age at which it becomes clear that there is talent coming through. It's not like other sports necessarily. And I don't know. I'm trying to think whether it would happen in football, whether you'd have interview with 14-year-olds as to what they're doing. I don't know. I'm trying to think of other sports.
You would do it, like the schoolboys playing in games. Absolutely. They're playing in games for England, or if they were the equivalent of that. And similarly, if you had the Schoolboy Rugby Cup, things along those lines.
And who publish it? Who would publish that? Who are those? Do banners. I want examples of basically
be live on
children,
TV.
Teenagers being interviewed. And I suppose the... I've seen on like official YouTube channels as well that they feature a lot of the youth academy players. And actually... a lot of the YouTube channels, this is football specifically, a lot of the youth academy players do go along and compete against each other or for YouTube challenges and things like that. So they obviously have some element of media training already at academy level, which is encouraging. But actually, one-on-one kind of interviews with them as well. It's a bit different with football, isn't it? Because it's so closely managed with them. You can't film anything, can you? Because it's all around rights and stuff like that. Whereas I think it's a bit different with things like cross country and stuff like that, where you've got people along a course or any kind of race where you've got just so many people in different positions and you can't control it as much.
Mm. Yeah, true.
Don't film kids, basically. Stop filming kids. What is wrong with you if you're filming kids? Then going on social media, finding them and tagging them. That's basically a general rule.
Lesson learned. I'll start doing that.
We did ask
in the group last week about the Burberry Goddess Eau de Perfume advert and the running style of the individual involved.
Oh yeah, what's the feedback been about that?
People didn't seem to mind it as much as it didn't jar people as much as I thought it had. Like Wendy said, she just thought her sports bra was incredibly effective, was her observation of it. Maria said she wished she looked like that when she ran. Chased by lions, yeah.
And everyone would run much more efficiently if they were chased by lions.
And Neil said that he was struggling to decide, so had to watch it 7 times. So that's a little bit worrying, Neil.
Neil.
But Dan Barrett also said that, kind of related, that anyone in TV or film needs to be dressed by a costume department person who is an actual runner. I think that's a good observation, because whenever you watch films like Run, Fat Boy Run, or the equivalent, or they're always wearing kit that you think, I've never seen a runner dress like that.
Yeah, but it's beginner runner, isn't it? Beginner runners don't really know what to wear, so it's probably more accurate.
But even beginner runner, there are some kind of golden rules of what you expect to see. And they...
Right, what would you expect? When I think about what I used to run in, when I ran my first marathon, I was wearing totally the wrong kit.
But I think in television and film, everyone always is dressed wearing a sweatband whenever they run. I don't know.
That is true. That
is true. They've always got a sweatband.
They have always got a sweatband.
And you never see anyone out running in a sweatband.
No, that's true.
And they've got the wrist sweatbands that are kind of from 1980s hip hop videos. They always have the set, and you're like, where has that come from?
Dave Bedford, like literally, like you know who they're appealing to, don't you? You're like, if it's someone above a certain age, you're like, this is for 50-year-olds. They'll know that this is a runner from the sweatbands.
The sweatband does it. So there's lots of things like that you think, and actually even new runners do tend to have like quite a good pair of trainers, whereas in TV and film, they're always wearing like, is it green flash
Hokers.
Or
Hokers.
Pumps or yeah. So, well, maybe that's our question.
If you had to dress a beginner runner who are making all the mistakes that a beginner runner makes because they think that that's what running is, what would they be wearing? Because I think they'd be carrying a Lucozade Sport. I think that would be the thing that would show that they'd be, because they feel like they have to have a Lucozade Sport, which of course, when you're going out for a 10-minute run. And because when I think that reminds me of the colour run. When I went to a colour run, like literally everyone was holding Lucozade Sports. You're like, this is like a mile.
Yeah, you definitely have an energy drink in the hand. Yeah. They'd potentially be wearing a cotton
sweatband.
Singlet. Sweatband.
Cotton. Yeah, definitely cotton. Cotton, yeah. Cotton is...
Or females non-sports bra, just in a normal bra, not thinking, oh, this is going to be problematic. Shorts, probably Bermuda style shorts, maybe, or basketball style shorts,
basketball
like
style
shorts.
Yeah, cotton basketball style, probably Nike or something.
Socks, thick socks.
Yeah,
thick. And then shoes.
Shoes would probably be all right. Like probably Nike Air or something like that.
Yeah, Nike Air, Green Flash.
You're literally describing me when I started out running here. It's exactly like almost exactly what I wore.
Yeah. I mean, we'll ask this in the group. What are the TV stereotypes? But also, what would we expect?
£400 watch, £400 sports watch as well.
Yeah, and like plenty of gels for the first 5K.
Yeah, and then an experienced runner doing a 5K, poles, hydration vest, like literally more what's it called, breathable material than you can imagine or possibly need. It's a
big jump, isn't it?
It's a big
jump. You might get some hydration vests on beginner runners these days. I mean, last night when I went out in just any old kit. I was amazed by a couple of people who were jogging around, both with their hydration vests that looked fairly packed.
People wear hydration vests for everything. Like you see people like literally go for a run around hydration vests. Just on the amount of people doing marathons with hydration vests as well, and shorter distances is massive.
They've done well, the vests, haven't they? Mr. and Mrs. Vest.
Mr. and Mrs. Vest have tricked everyone into
mind. Can't you, we're saying vests again.
Mind you, if you do something like Brighton Marathon or Edinburgh, where they run out of water, hydration vest probably makes a lot of sense.
Yes, this is true. This is true. Well, I've got to crack on with the rest of my life now. So what? I'm going to love you and leave you, sir.
You haven't got a life anymore. You have children.
This is true. But I'm trying to earn some dollar for for the family now that they're both at home. And but do better to get in the group and let us know what you think are either the classic things people wear in films and TV when they're a typical runner or first-time runners. What are the mistakes, or what's the typical gear that a first-time runner would
wear? What did you wear? What were the mistakes you made as a first-time runner? And I don't want someone going, hey, you can't make a mistake as a first-time runner because you're a first-time... But yeah, bollocks to all that. Yes, yes, we know. We're not beginner-shaming or
whatever. Who in your head was doing that?
There's always someone, isn't there? There's always someone who would be like, oh, you shouldn't... Don't criticise beginners because at least they're starting somewhere. And everyone makes beginner mistakes. It's fine to call them a mistake.
At the beginning. And thank you for Jason from Athletics Weekly for actually asking the question of and explaining the dilemma as well. I think it's always good for people to understand the challenges. And hopefully we've managed
and to stop tagging
practice.
Those 12-year-olds on social, though. Stop it, Jason. Stop it.
Tag us. We need the followers. Thanks for listening, guys. And if you've got some suggestions of future guests, let us know. And I thought we haven't mentioned the A to Z of bad stuff. You're bad boy. And
no, we haven't, have we?
We need to send people there because I think if this is one of the first bad stuff you've listened to, go and listen to that because it explains all the idiocy of the podcast and a
couple of
history.
Are you trying to say idiosyncrasies there and then gave up and said idiocies?
No, absolute idiocy. Is that what I was going for? Not idiosyncrasies.
Idiocy. Out-of-date idiocy. I don't even know if we use half the terminology that we have in that anyway anymore.
But it's about 10 hours of a lot of fun content. So it really is a nice kind of exposure to bad boy running. In terms of future episodes...
Wait. I said the other thing as well. Because we're approaching Christmas, we should absolutely point people to the 12 days of Christmas.
Yes. I mean,
No. Don't say anything. Yeah, do the 12 days.
Rattle through those. Happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas. That's our little present to you. Find the 12 days of Christmas.
Now, do balance. If you've got any suggestions of guests, then do message me, david@badboyrun.com, or message on Instagram, because we are, I'm recruiting at the moment. And future episodes to look out for. We spoke to Sarah Siskind about the LSD 50K. And how she used psychedelics to battle oppression. That is an amazing episode. We have just spoke to Corinne, who was the UTMB commentator, who was recently told that UTMB wouldn't be wanting her services anymore. We interviewed her last night. And we've also got mentioned a little bit earlier, Nick Griggs, who is the under 23 3,000 meter champion. Although I've just seen in my notes, it says 300 meter champion. It seems... less competitive at the age of 16 about how his life changed from filming himself running on a track, uploading it in a competition, and everything exploded from there. Really interesting episode where he also talks about the choice that a lot of athletes have in Northern Ireland about whether they represent the UK or Ireland and the pressure on that, and also the expectations of what support you get from either side of those decisions. Oh, anything else to chuck in there, JD?
Yeah, if you want to join the Facebook group, head over to Facebook, type in Bad Boy Running Podcast, answer 3 questions, and in you jump, where you can let us know about your beginner running mistakes.
And I've just noticed something. When was the 4-minute mile? That was, okay, Sports Personality of the Year, we're obsessed with the 4-minute mile, yet... Roger Bannister didn't win Sports Personality of the year that he broke the 4-minute mile.
It's been a joke since then. It is a joke.
Wow. So it was instead won by another athlete, Christopher Chataway. I don't know. So we're going to next episode, I'm going to tell you what Christopher Chataway did because.
Yeah, but the thing is, they probably said, oh, yeah, it's just an FKT, isn't it? It's just an FKT.
Yeah, it's
Chataway probably won a real race, not some FKT around a running track.
So we're going to update you on how he kept Roger Bannister out of the prize that he went to his grave frustrated, cursing Sports Personality of the Year.
So who cares? Do people really care about Sports Personality of the Year?
Josh Kerr does. Josh Kerr is furious. Actually, I have no idea who he is, but I am on his behalf. But well, that's just it, guys, and we'll see you next time.
See you later. Bye 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 bye.
Admit I was a clown to be messing around, but that doesn't mean that you have to leave town. Come back, yes, and give me one more try, 'cause a love like this should I never ever die. Come back.
Fuck you, buddy.